This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Assimi Goïta was a leader in the August 2020 coup, which deposed former Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta.
That's Annie Reisenberg reporting on the attempted assassination of Mali's leader. Details coming up. Also, the ruling African Congress in South Africa is being blamed for the recent violence in the country. And Muslims around the world are celebrating Eid al-Adha, one of the most important days in the Islamic calendar. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, news that is just breaking. Witnesses say two people have attempted to stab the interim president of Mali and coup leader Colonel Assimi Goïta at the Great Mosque of Bamako. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako.
Two men armed with knives attempted to stab Mali's transitional president, Colonel Assimi Goïta, Tuesday morning in Bamako's central mosque after Eid al-Adha prayers, according to a freelance reporter who was present for the morning prayers. Eid al-Adha, known as Tabaski in Mali, is one of the most celebrated holidays in the country. Goïta was not injured in the attack, and the assailants were apprehended by security forces. Assimi Goïta was a leader in the August 2020 coup, which deposed former Malian president Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta. He became interim president after another military coup in May of this year, which deposed the then interim civilian president Ba Diaw. Elections are scheduled for February 2022. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
One of South Africa's most respected anti-apartheid veterans say the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, is partly responsible for the recent violence in the country because it failed to turn against Jacob Zuma when he was misgoverning the nation. Riots and looting broke out in South Africa last week, sparked by the jailing of the former president for refusing to testify at an inquiry into corruption. This week, Zuma went on trial for financial crimes linked to an arms deal in the late 1990s. Darren Taylor reports.
Former intelligence minister Ronnie Kasrils fought alongside Zuma against the apartheid state when they were commanders in the ANC's military wing, Umkhonto we Sizwe.
Zuma's actually a grotesque mediocrity. We've known that within the ANC from exile.
He says the ruling party initially tolerated Zuma because he was needed to broker peace between the warring ANC and the Inkatha Freedom Party, or IFP, in KwaZulu-Natal in the early 1990s. The bloody conflict was threatening to derail the country's journey to democracy. Zuma, a Zulu elder, played a key role in ending the violence. The ANC also needed the votes of South Africa's most populous province to rise to power. Kasrel says Zuma used his Zulu ethnicity to build support through corrupt patronage that helped his backers grow wealthy. The great tragedy of the ANC, says Kasrels, is that it allowed Zuma and his followers to neglect the poor. He says the years of misrule and the current schism in the ruling party mean the country's fertile ground for social upheaval. Zuma survived several parliamentary votes of no confidence in his leadership between 2009 and 2018, each time saved by his ANC colleagues. In 2018, though, the ANC pushed him to resign as corruption investigations expanded and appeared to implicate him. Zuma has denied all allegations of corruption and has said the investigations are politically motivated.
And that's the basis then of what's been going on in terms of the support that Zuma has been getting from certain nefarious sources that are now being revealed as having been part of this absolute mess that has occurred, a criminal attempt to deal with the Zuma incarceration, to deal with Ramaphosa, to capture or recapture the ANC.
Kasrul says Zuma's dreaming if he thinks the recent violence can set the scene for his political comeback. He's also convinced of a silver lining in the outbreak of chaos, in that it has exposed those in the ANC who don't care about South Africa and its people. This, says Kasrul's, is a great opportunity for President Cyril Ramaphosa to rid his administration of people who appear to have tried to organize a coup.
We hope that what the Minister of State Security has been alleging is something that can be presented and people can be charged, and we can see an end game to the way in which these people have absolutely distorted the country, has brought us to such a horrible point in time. Let me just add now.
The government says several alleged instigators of the violence have been arrested and their names will be made public soon. On Tuesday, the court hearing Zuma's trial on corruption charges postponed any further sessions until August 10, while it decides on the former president's request to appear in person rather than via video link from jail. Zuma argued that he needs to be physically in the court to confer fully with his attorneys. The trial had resumed on Monday after a recess since May. Zuma faces charges related to weapons deals when he was vice president in 1999. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Muslims around the world are celebrating Eid al-Adha, one of the most important days on the Islamic calendar. It honors the Prophet Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son at God's direction. It coincides with the end of the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, for many Muslims, Eid this year is more subdued than past years of gatherings with family and friends. Muslims in Cameroon have marked Eid al-Adha by praying for an end to the country's separatist conflict, which has killed more than 3,000 people since 2017. Muslim leaders also called on Cameroon's vaccine skeptics to be inoculated against COVID-19, which has infected more than 80,000 people and killed at least 1,300. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Allahu Akbar Kabira. Walhamdulillahi Kafira.
This is the voice of Muslim cleric Buba Goigoi officiating Eid al-Adha prayers at the Islamic complex in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé. Buba says in his sermon that all Muslims should live lives of complete submission to God to enjoy eternal life, both physical on earth and spiritual in heaven with Allah. Sule Mane is spokesman of Cameroon's National Moon Crescent Commission that is responsible for announcing the day of Muslim feasts. He says Buba asks Cameroonians of all religious denominations to educate civilians on the need for stability in the Central African state.
It is an opportunity for every Muslim to have a spiritual project to pray for peace, security, unity, health, and living together in our country. A good Muslim should be an ambassador of his religion, somebody who tries to work harder for his family, for his community, and for his country.
Mani says that the 1,500 people at the prayer complex include Christians. The Council of Imams and Muslim Dignitaries of Cameroon organized the prayer for peace. The council's coordinator, Musa Umaru, said Muslims who are separatist fighters should drop their weapons and encourage their peers of other religions to stop fighting. Cameroon estimates that there are at least 2,000 separatist fighters in its English-speaking western regions. The government says the number of fighters who are Muslims is unknown since the rebels hide as civilians. Suleiman Mifiri Ngochemi is imam of the Nkozwa Mosque located 10 kilometers west of Yaoundé. He says besides promoting peace, Muslim cleric in Cameroon also cautioned faithful on the dangers of COVID-19. He says he is asking all Muslims in Cameroon to respect COVID-19 barrier measures like regular washing of hands with soap and water, putting on face masks in public, and keeping a physical distance of at least a meter from other people. Ngochemi says Muslims should not hesitate to take COVID-19 vaccine because the jab can save their lives and help to stop the coronavirus spread that has killed so many people. Cameroon says fewer than 150,000 people have been vaccinated since April, when the government received 700,000 doses to inoculate civilians against COVID-19. Last year, during Eid al-Adha, Cameroon restricted prayers and festivities that brought together more than 10 people. Thousands of Muslims in the capital, Yaoundé, defied the restrictions ordered as part of measures to stop the spread of COVID-19. This year, many came with face masks but did not respect the at least 1 meter distance from each person as instructed by the government. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Nigerian media report. Yoruba separatist leader Sunday Adeyemo, known as Sunday Igbo, has been arrested in neighboring Benin as he was about to board a flight to Germany. As Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, he is the second Nigerian separatist leader this month to be arrested outside the country.
The arrest comes 3 weeks after Nigerian security operatives barged into Sunday Igboho's home, picked up relatives and accomplices, and declared him wanted for stockpiling weapons. Igboho, who has been campaigning for an independent Yoruba state in southwest Nigeria, went into hiding after the raid. He made his way to Benin, where security operatives arrested him at the Port Novo airport at 2 a.m. on Monday morning. He is expected to be extradited to Nigeria on Tuesday, according to local media sources. Igboho rose to prominence in January after he issued a 7-day ultimatum to herders and pastoralists in southwest Oyo State to vacate the state. Speaking with Sahara Reporters, an online news outlet based in the U.S., Igboho's legal counsel, Belumi Olajengbesi, confirmed his arrest and said, quote, "We are making efforts to ensure that he is fine," end quote. His arrest highlights authorities' crackdown on growing separatist movements in the West African nation. Late last month, authorities arrested Nnamdi Kanu, the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra, or IPOB, and returned him to Nigeria. He now faces trials for offenses including treasonable felony. The separatist movements have gained momentum in recent years, which observers attribute to the Nigerian government's inability to deal with widespread insecurity. Meanwhile, government critics are accusing authorities of being heavy-handed in cracking down on separatist movements, but slow in addressing criminal activities like large-scale kidnappings for ransom. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Botswana, initially praised for its efforts to contain the spread of COVID-19, has seen figures shoot up, with the country now regarded as one of Southern Africa's hotspots. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
According to Reuters' COVID-19 tracker, Botswana is emerged as one of the region's COVID-19 hotspots. The statistics show the country has been recording 527 cases per 100,000 people every day. Last week, the daily average rose to 1,736 infections, the highest since the pandemic began. Botswana has recorded 1,274 deaths, and the vaccination program has stalled because of a shortage of vaccines. In a press statement Friday, the Minister of Health said it had run out of AstraZeneca vaccines, which were to be administered to people waiting for their second shot. Botswana earlier this year indicated it had procured sufficient vaccines to vaccinate the entire adult population. However, in his address to the nation last week, President Mokgweetsi Masisi said the government does not expect some vaccine deliveries until December. He said they now expect to have vaccinated the entire eligible population by the end of 2022.
The global shortage of vaccines is making it difficult for African countries, Botswana included, to vaccinate their populations. It has become even more challenging for some of our fellow African countries to follow up on the second vaccination. We are expecting to receive 50,000 Moderna vaccines and at least 500 doses of Johnson & Johnson vaccines by December 2021. Our plan is to have vaccinated every eligible Botswana and resident by the end of 2022.
In March 2020, President Masisi declared a state of emergency, SOE, to fight the spread of COVID-19. But Dumaboko, leader of the opposition coalition, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, UDC, argues the state of emergency is not serving its purpose.
The state of emergency hasn't served much, mm-hmm. if anything at all. It has resulted in wide-scale impoverishment of the people. It has resulted in runaway levels of corruption because of the over-centralization of decision-making. The only thing that would get us out of this problem was a large-scale rollout of vaccines to the general population. And it seems we were lax.
The National Assembly is due to debate the extension of the state of emergency at the end of September. Opposition members and civic organizations have urged Masisi to end it. Masisi last week announced new restrictions, which include closing schools, banning inter-district travel, and the suspension of alcohol sales in a bid to stem the rise in cases. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
The largest referral hospital in Zimbabwe's second largest city is reeling under a flood of COVID-19 infections. But medical workers say what is even more worrying is that Mpilo Hospital staff members are also falling ill. Arigando gives us more on the story.
More than 60 doctors and nurses at Mpilo Central Hospital in Bulawayo have tested positive and are now in isolation, a situation that is hobbling healthcare at the facility. Authorities at the hospital say the infections were recorded over the past 2 weeks against a city total of 2,190 over the same period. Since last year, a total of 390 healthcare workers have tested positive. The Zimbabwe Nurses Association says the bulk of those infected are nurses. Enoch Dongo is with the association.
Yes, for the last few weeks, we've seen the increase in number of COVID-19 positive cases, as well as the number of deaths. It has been increased. This has really affected the health delivery system. This has really affected the health workers themselves, especially the nurses.
Badongo says that COVID-19 is just but one of many challenges affecting the country's health delivery system, with medical staff frustrated that their demands for better pay and working conditions have achieved little.
Before this third wave, there was a lot of demoralization of nurses, and we have a lot of nurses resigning, a lot of nurses moving out of the country, looking for greener pastures in Ireland, UK, and other countries outside Zimbabwe. Most of those nurses that are resigning and going out are senior nurses, and they are leaving a gap which is going to take long to cover as health delivery system. We now have a shortage of staff which can cripple the health delivery system if not managed well.
There are concerns medical staff are vulnerable to community spread of the virus as they use crowded public transportation. Efingwe, a socioeconomic analyst, says that danger means that government must act.
To protect healthcare workers, because they are frontline workers, they are at the edge, right there at the contact with the COVID-19 situation. So there is a need for government to put up measures that will protect our health workers. They must ensure that there is additional transport mechanisms to alleviate the overcrowding that we are seeing at Zuko buses.
The Zimbabwe Nurses Association says it has presented a number of recommendations to improve their work conditions and welfare, but Dongo says the government has not implemented any of them.
So there is need for government to go back to what we proposed long back last year, the issue of decongesting the hospitals. There is no need of those few nurses that are available to come to work at once and also to work long working hours, because when they are working long working hours, they are being exposed too much. And so we need to decongest our hospitals. We need to, there's also need for government to make sure they provide PPEs for the few nurses that are left at work.
The government says it's doing its best to manage the COVID-19 situation and cites the national vaccination rollout program, which has vaccinated over 1 million citizens. Still, community members and nurses such as Dongo think the government needs to take better care of medical workers. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in
Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. Two candidates have advanced to the second round of Sao Tome and Principe's presidential election. News reports say that the first candidate is Carlos Vita Nova, a former infrastructure minister who represents the party of outgoing president Evaristo Carvalho. Nova won 39% of the first round vote. On Sunday, he will be competing with Guli Hermapasar da Costa, who was prime minister of the small island nation from 1999 to 2001. He won 21% of the vote. A record 19 candidates were running for the presidency in the poor former Portuguese colony of some 210,000 inhabitants located in the Gulf of Guinea. Sao Tome Principe's runoff will be August 8th. Somalia is sending only two athletes to compete at the Tokyo Olympics, but they include the country's first ever non-track athlete, female boxer Ramala Ali. Somalia's Olympic Committee has welcomed her to the team, as Mohamed Kayi reports from Mogadishu.
Somali Olympic team officially departed for the Tokyo Games on Friday after President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo bid them farewell. The head of state and senior sport officials urged the team to compete successfully while proudly flying the Somali flag. Middle distance runner Ali Ido will compete in the 800 meters race, following 2 years of intense training with professional athletes like Mo Farah of Britain and Ayanle Suleiman of Djibouti in the Ethiopian highlands. Ido says he is well prepared this time round and confident about his chances. He says, "We are more prepared for the Tokyo Games than we were for 2012 London Olympics and 2016 Rio Games." He added that he expects different positive results following professional training with some international athletes conducted outside the country. Ido will join in Tokyo the country's first Olympic female boxer, Ramla Ali. Mohamed Abdul Haji, the head of Somali Olympic Committee, says he's happy to see Ali qualify. He says the committee is attempting to train other athletes outside long-distance running, which is so popular in Horn of African nations. He said Somalia previously competed in only one category in the Olympics, which was long-distance running, but that's sending a middle-distance runner and a boxer to the 2020 Tokyo Games is a first step toward sending more athletes in various categories to feature Olympic Games. Sports Minister Hamza Said Hamza says the government is working to upgrade Somalia's athletic facilities. He says the Ministry of Sports and Youth will closely work with sports fraternity in the country in order to develop professional athletes by developing facilities such as stadiums for training to improve their results. Somalia has never won an Olympic medal in any sports. With better training, Ido and Ali hope to make the country proud in the games that kick off on Friday next week. Mohamed Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.